Welcome to The Offer, the no sugar added approach to the talent triangle with an unfiltered view of employers, candidates, and recruiters. I am your host, Michael Glinter.
The Offer, unfiltered.
Before we get started, just a reminder, if you need any type of services, questions, you are looking to do a sponsorship on my show, or you have needs as far as resumes or anything as far as the staffing industry, please email me at michael@michaelglinter.com. Again, that is michael@michaelglinter.com, so we can connect. You can also check me out on social media. And please, as a reminder, don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast to get weekly updates, as well as please pass along information to your friends and family. Not only are we in trying times with this pandemic, but there's also a major shift between generations that are happening as we speak. And a lot of people don't understand the differences between the generations, and a lot of companies don't understand how to differentiate which generations, you know, really going to make a difference during these trying times. So I brought an amazing guest on. You're going to love Kristen. In fact, if you do not listen to this whole podcast, you're crazy, because she is going to give you a lot of information, a lot of great information, but she's also going to give you some excitement, fun, laughter. We're going to have a really good time with this one. So if you don't keep listening, then you really are missing out. I'd like to welcome Jennifer. We're going to go right into the generational gaps and talk a little bit about kind of what's going on in the world.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
So how is life in Tennessee? Is it Tennessee or Alabama?
I'm in Alabama. I'm right beside the Tennessee line. I live in Huntsville.
How's it going over there?
I haven't killed anybody yet, so I'm doing pretty darn good.
And you're staying inside?
Yes. Well, we're outside a lot, but we're not around town. We are just in our backyard a lot.
Yeah, no.
Children, three of them are very active boys.
Staying away from people, I guess, would be the best way.
Yes, we are staying away from people. I did drop off M&Ms for all of my friends yesterday on their front doors. Have you seen some of the M&Ms have really funny sayings on them right now?
No.
So, like, mine's like, I wish I had more friends like me. So I got a bunch of those.
Oh my God, you're so funny.
And put them on everybody's door.
That's actually, you know, it's funny, is that's actually a cute little thing. I never thought about that.
Yeah, just a little, like, it's nothing big, right? It's just like a, hey, you're my friend, and I know that it's rough for you too. So I'm just going to go stick a little something on your door. Yeah. And then I just would text them and say, hey, there's something on your front door, after I drove away.
Very cute. We were talking the other day, what I really want to pick your brain about, not just the whole generational differences and how we manage people and the millennial and Gen Zs versus the Generation X and our generation. I also want to kind of get your thought process on the approaching today's world, because right now we're in I've never seen anything like it. I don't think any of us have.
No.
We're at a point where, you know, you have college kids that aren't even walking for their graduation that are getting ready to go into the workforce, and with a shock of what they're walking into. You have older people that have canceled their retirement to come back into the workforce because their retirement took a nosedive, and or people that were planning on retiring that are not now. And I think not only is there a challenge when it comes to finding work, but I think it goes back to, there's a distinct difference between a baby boomer and or Generation X, mm-hmm, versus the millennial and Generation Z generations. And I was talking to a Gen Zer yesterday who's got 3 years of experience, and he lost his job. And he said, he called me up to do his resume, and he's like, so what do you think for me? And I'm like, well, I'm like, what are you looking for? And so he's telling me that he's looking for a promotion, like a step up. Like he's currently an analyst, and he wants to get into a senior analyst, like a development analyst. And I'm like, you probably should just think about taking what you can get right now. You know, mm-hmm, I mean, you just lost your job. You've had 3 jobs in 3 years. I wouldn't necessarily go overly picky. And he, of course, was surprised by that, because he's like, well, I mean, I'm ready for the next step. I'm like, no, even if the market was good, you're not really ready. And when a company is looking at hiring people, not to say which one they should hire, but
right,
what would you say is the difference, the significant differences between the two? And the other thing is
how do you convince companies that just because John Smith, who's 58, was a VP last year, that he's not going to, you know, he's going to be loyal no matter what, even if it's a manager's job? Like, how do you, because I get this all the time. Companies say, you know, I'm not going to hire him. He's too overqualified. He won't stay. But the baby boomer generation is all about staying. They were taught
safety. Mm-hmm.
They were taught loyalty and, you know, they're not coming to just, you know, pass the time. How do you compare the two, and how would you convince companies, you know, from a baby boomer standpoint, that want to take steps back or are willing to take steps back?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is they need to be really clear in their, you know, their resume and their doc, you know, their cover letter or whatever, that they are willing to be flexible, that they don't have to necessarily stay at the same level. Clarity is key, I would say, in a lot of this. If you are willing to do something opposite of what you've been doing, then you need to be clear about that so that when the HR director sees that, they have a better shot of believing it, right? That you've gone ahead and taken the chance on that. As far as differences or what I would recommend, quite honestly, I think there's advantages to everybody. I love millennials personally, but here's one of the big things that I'll tell you about millennials. If companies don't figure out how to attract and retain top millennials, they will go under as a company. And here's why. The millennials will be the majority of eligible workers for a minimum of the next 30 years based on census projections. Millennials are so big. They're the largest generation we've ever had. Their birth rate, 86 million, and that's before you even get into immigration. They're massive. And so if we don't figure out how to attract and retain the next group, then we don't have sustainability. And that's your one downside, right, to always going for the older worker, is that you have to, long-term, you have to have sustainability in your company. And if you don't bring in your young people now and train them to be your future middle managers, as people do exit the workforce and Gen Xers push into those positions, you've got to have a group of people ready to go into middle management. So that idea of get your young people in, attract and retain your top talent in the middle is extremely important if you want to stay alive. I mean, and that's just the bottom line. So here's what I would say. If you're going to bring in older people to your company at this point in time, they need to bring value in the form of not just getting tasks done, but being good leaders. They need to be strong leaders. They need to be strong mentors. They need to be stable, and not that they just know things, but can they teach and grow the next generation of workers? So I think that there is advantages to bringing in every single group of people here. But what I would suggest to your listeners is find what spot needs to be filled and make sure that you're looking at that from a not only physical, can they do the task, but from the social standpoint of that. Can they lead? Can they grow? Can they develop the team around them?
The generation, the baby boomer generation, has to be willing to take the time to teach them.
100%.
I've heard the complaint so many times from millennials that, you know, they have this boss that's, you know, more seasoned, and they want to learn more. They want to know more. They're ready to go. They're engaged. Yeah. But then they're not given any tasks. They're not given guidance. And that's why they leave.
Yeah, 100%. Well, but again, let's go back to that idea of high levels of competition and the need to maintain a job. So you're going to become, the number one way you keep your job if you're a baby boomer is you become a subject matter expert. You know something that no one else knows. Because then even if you are a jerk or you make a big mistake, nobody can take your job. Mm. So now what happens is we're looking at these older generations, and we're bringing in the younger generations, and we're saying, hey, we want you to give all your subject matter expertise over here to this younger generation. And the boomers are like, I'm not sure if I'm done yet. So no, I'm not going to pass over my subject matter expertise to somebody that can work at double my speed and half my pay. I'll train them in the 2 weeks before I leave, right? And when you step back from a second, that's actually brilliant for the boomer to make sure that they have job security, right? But what it does is it doesn't spread information around to a generation who are very comfortable with information spread, right? This is a generation that has lived with the internet, where you can literally find experts around the world who will tell you their most brilliant secrets online. So when you go to your boss and your boss won't reveal those key things to you, it feels wrong to the millennial and it feels smart to the boomer. Do you follow me?
Absolutely.
So again, the thing is that what we have to do is step back and look at why people look at things the way they do. It's usually not most people who are listening. If you're a young millennial and you have a boomer that won't teach you, it's probably about self-preservation. It's not about the person being a jerk. So when you can step back and look at it that way, then you say, okay, what I need to do is meet the internal need for that person then and help them understand that I'm not trying to take over their job, that I think they have value and I want to learn from them. And you change your approach to that person, and now they're more interested in giving you away content. But when you say, I'm young and I'm going to replace you and by God, you have to teach me, they say, screw you. No, I don't. Right? And so the approach is what the problem is, really on both sides. And you've got, let's flip that. You've got boomers that are looking at some millennials in a very suspicious, competitive way of you're here to take my job and take my security. And you can work at double my speed. And so I'm not going to give you any other advantages that makes it possible for you to beat me in the competition. So they're naturally deferring and holding people at arm's length. Now, Gen Xers, we've been lucky in the middle. Many baby boomers had no problem giving us away, you know, all their secrets because they were just one step ahead. The other side of that, though, is you've got these millennials who have this tech that have made the world speed up. And that's the best way I can describe it. The world feels faster to boomers now than it ever has before. And so they are worried about getting eclipsed, and for good reasons. They should be. We constantly change things, and millennials are unafraid to blow up a computer in the way that boomers are afraid to blow up a computer. The big thing here is that you have to meet each other's internal needs, the emotional needs, the respect, the care, the growing as a people. When you look at people as people and not as enemies, you'll have a much better exchange of content.
So I'm going to say this, and I know that there's going to be generation millennials and Zers out there that are going to be really mad at my comment, but
make sure it doesn't reflect on me.
I'm going to give you this mindset, and this is my thoughts on it. When a company during a recessionary time has to pull back, we all know, and they lay people off, we all know that they typically lay off the least successful or the least productive person naturally, because they're trying to consolidate so that they can do just as much with what they have with five people less.
Yeah.
So generally you find two things. One, companies tend to keep people that are most productive, most successful, drive the most sales, whatever, not only to keep things kind of going during trying times, but they also do that because they're going to be the people that are going to help them recover the fastest.
Correct.
On the flip side, they're also going to be the people that are going to be able to functionally mentor and develop as people come to back to work because they're the most tenured and successful.
Mm-hmm.
The downside is with companies ramping back up, a lot of times they go after the more tenured folks because if they bring some more tenure folks on, they'll have an immediate impact. They'll be able to jump on things without training and development. And, you know, then they could then use their guidance as they further ramp up to hire on the millennials and Gen Zers. With that being said, and this is hard information. I know this to be the case. I worked through the recession the last time, and I've already talked to clients this time and told me what their game plan is. From that perspective, how does a millennial and a Gen Zer right now sell the fact that they shouldn't be left on the side of the road? Because essentially, that's what's going to happen for a while. Is I feel like, and I have a lot of friends that are Gen Zers and millennials. I've done several podcasts with millennials. I feel naturally compelled to help the kids of tomorrow because I was that person previously, like we all were, but I struggled because I didn't have mentors. And so I know how important mentors are. But at the end of the day, what do you tell Gen Zers who are going to feel like that they're being left on the side? Like, what do they do to make themselves more marketable? Do they oversell the fact that they're eager to learn and willing to pick up quickly? Because they have to tone down the rhetoric, right? They can't be going on and on about how they should be, you know, the president of a company. Now, they just need to get into work. But, you know, do you feel like, you know, them acting as if that they're okay, I'll make me a gopher, tell me what to do and I'll do it. Do you think that that mentality is going to be a selling point to a company, or do you think the company's still going to be banking on somebody that's been there, done that, because, you know, we're in times where everything's very lean?
So it could be a split. For starters, what I'll say is it depends on who your the culture of the particular company is, right? Because one of the big things you have to understand is that people like people that are like them. I'll say that again.
That's true.
People like people that are like them. So if you have a much more seasoned upper management staff, then they might be more prone to hiring more seasoned employees. Where if you have a very agile, quick to pivot younger staff, leadership team, they might say, no, we need the young people. We need people who are going to go into this totally different world. We don't need the old school anymore. It very much depends. And the bottom line, Michael, is we don't know. We don't know what will happen after the quarantine because we've never seen anything like this. But I will tell you this, there's no way it's going back to the way it was. No way. Impossible.
No, I do have a fear. There's been this movement for a long time of people insisting that you should be able to work from home or work remote. And while, listen, I work from home, I get it. There's a sense that you can get more accomplished oftentimes when you have people physically in at work, you know, physically.
Ants work harder around other ants.
Right. The mindset that everybody wants to work from home now, I get it. You know, we all have, there are benefits and non-benefits to doing that. I think that the challenge now is you're right. We're going to come out of this and then all these millennials are going to say, look, we worked from home and we were productive. Mm-hmm. And I think that people need to realize that it's not, even though it's not going to go back to one and the same, you can't expect this to be the long term. Because
I think what we'll find is we'll fall into a hybrid, that we'll move into a hybrid. Companies will hybrid for a while.
Kind of give me your thought process, I guess, first on, you know, the differences in the generations, what the gaps are, and then how do the older generation versus the younger generation, you know, how do they navigate this crazy environment?
So it's interesting when you were talking about the idea of, you know, I'm ready to be the next manager. A lot of this comes from in the late 80s when the Board of Education for the United States basically decided that they were going to put a full-scale self-esteem program into place. And the major recipients of that were the millennials. And so what happened would be a millennial would come to school on the very first day and they would have a coloring sheet that would say, you can be anything you want when you grow up. What are five things you like about you? And the government, what their plan was, is that if we pump people full of self-esteem, then they won't want to get into drugs or gangs, which is insane because now we just have people that feel really good about their drug problem, right?
Right.
I mean, it's not connected. Self-esteem's not connected. So the problem is you have a large generation of people who have been told that they can do anything and be anything if they just want it bad enough. And that's really not true. I personally don't think you can be anything you want when you grow up. I think you can only be what you have been uniquely designed to be. Right?
Right.
So for me, when you think about the idea of, okay, I might say I want to be a NASA engineer all day, but my brain's just not good at math. All right. So I can work my ever-loving butt off, and it doesn't mean that I will be the kind of NASA engineer that anyone would ever want to hire. Wanting it is not the same as being equipped to do it. I'd love to be a supermodel. Well, sorry, I'm 5'5". That's not going to work out for me, right? So there's certain things that you have to have inside of you. So the problem is that just like with your example of your person, if he's been told you can do anything, you can be anything if you just want it bad enough, well, now you're in a situation where you can't. And the universe has said no. And the problem is that they have to make a choice now. Do I accept the reality, which is what that I can't do and be anything that I want, or do I keep buying the lie that's been fed to me, which is if I just want it bad enough, it'll all work out. The self-esteem is actually a big issue. Gen Xers and baby boomers, we didn't have that. You know, our parents would say things like, you're just lucky to be here, right? Mm-hmm. For Gen Xers, there was no Amber Alert for us. Our parents were like, it's cool, we'll just make another one, right? So, you know, a big difference in how we were seen. We weren't held up as the main thing. That's going to be a big difference in how the millennials are going to perceive going into the next thing versus the boomers and the Xers who are going to say, I just got to get something, or I got to stay where I am. Play it safe, play it safe, play it safe, versus I've put my 3 years in, I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, I've got everything they need me. It's a fundamental difference in the opinions of the generation. So I think that's going to be one of the big things that you're going to deal with is, you know, you're going to have younger people who have put in their 3 years, and they're going to say, all right, I'm ready to go be rocking awesome. The other people are going to say, no, 3 years doesn't mean the same thing anymore that it did even 3 weeks ago prior quarantine.
So you think it's the education system that's caused this?
Tons. Yeah. So what we look at in my company, my company's name is Gen Y. So what we look at is what happened during your fundamental years of growth. So from ages 1 to, let's say, about 15 is where most people put it. From ages 1 to 15, your formative years, what was happening in the United States, let's assuming you were raised in the United States, that would shape your viewpoint of the world? What was happening in the economy? What was happening with war? What was happening with movies, music, parent structures? All of those things form our viewpoint in the world. And this is part of what makes us quite different, I think, is that we look at the micro generation. We look at things from a decade instead of a 20-year span, like a lot of people do with generations. So for example, if you were raised in the 1950s versus if you were raised in the 1960s, well, the country would call you both baby boomers, 50s and 60s. But the problem is that the United States did not look anywhere near the same for children of the 1950s as it did for children of the 1960s. So you're lumping people together that don't have a similar viewpoint. So what we do is look at the childhood, what was happening in schools and the way that we saw the world, and how does that now affect your viewpoint on how work gets done today?
Do you think part of it is that colleges don't truly help students figure out what they're good at and what they should be doing for their life?
Well, I think what happened was we decided that we were going to make sure that we taught theory. Theory is very safe. What companies decided to do was get very, what colleges decided to do was get very focused on theory and leave the practical applications to the company. Where previously college would spend a lot of time teaching you how to actually do the things that you were supposed to do.
Right.
The problem is now you've got generations of students who have a head full of knowledge and very little wisdom that comes along with actually doing the task. They know where to go to find it. They know where the resources are, but they haven't actually done it. And then another thing that's interesting, you were talking about from a college perspective, one of the things that we have to remember is that college has become exponentially more expensive. And that changes the way that supply and demand happens. So essentially when millennial parents decided that their children had to have a college degree, what that did was allow colleges to jack the prices up significantly. Okay. So
it's supply and demand.
I mean, it's completely supply and demand. So you have a huge amount of humans who have all been told you must go to college or you're not going to have a job, right? Mm-hmm. So I can jack my price up as much as I want to because I have made you all believe you must have this in order to be functional. So here's what's interesting. Most people can't afford the insane amounts that college costs. So they have to make a call when their child is in high school. So for example, Gen Xers and for baby boomers, an after school job was not optional for most of us. Okay. And in that crappy after school job at 15, 16, 17, 18, that's where you learned a lot of hard lessons about what work is really like. That somebody's got to clean the toilets. somebody's got to deal with the cranky coworkers, right? You learned a lot of those things. But the problem is, as college became significantly more expensive, parents had to make a call, Michael. They have to decide, do I give my child more time to study to give them the best possible chance of getting a scholarship so that they can afford this insanely high college? Or do I make them go get a part-time job? So we have a huge amount of people that chose the scholarship route. And so what happened was a large amount of young people lost the opportunity to learn those lessons that you get in the crappy part-time job when you're young. You follow me on this?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, and you're so spot on. Because, like, when I was – I'm a Generation Xer. I was born in 76. So when I was growing up, my parents – I had to earn everything. So when I hit the day I turned 16, I was at McDonald's putting in my application because they wouldn't let me get a car until I had money to pay for insurance. And so it was like, so from day one, when I was legally able to work, I worked, and I worked through college. And I also got a scholarship before at a high school. And I also worked my way through college to pay my bills. But I wasn't given a choice. My parents were, well, you know, I shouldn't say this, but my parents were a Jewish family. So they were very, very, very teaching of, you know, you have to earn things. You have to do things on your own. So it wasn't an open pocketbook. But you're right. As you start looking at some of the kids, you know, in the last few years that have been coming out of college, you look at their resume. Because I teach college kids how to write a resume. And it's so frustrating now because before, college kids would have work experience. But now, looking at the college kids, they have nothing to put on their resume. So,
but yeah. So as I was saying, you know, I got luggage for my 18th birthday and it wasn't optional. The ability to return home was not an option for me. And here's what's more interesting. It was not socially allowed. So when it became socially allowed, it changes the dynamic of everything. There's a major ripple effect that happens with the social allowance of returning home.
For all intents and purposes, I hate to say this, but you and I are to blame. Well, not
us.
The generation before us.
Yeah. This is the second half of the baby boomers. We call them the flower children.
They're the ones to blame because, you know, they didn't force their children to understand the meaning of work.
But also, you know, you have to remember that parental norms are trained across cultures. So they, for a lot of them, they'll remember, for those of you that are listening, that are in that second half of the baby boomers, you remember there was a book that came out by a guy named Dr. Spock. And Dr. Spock came in and he said, no, listen to the rhythm of your children. Don't make them sleep before they're ready. Let them eat when they're ready. Stop beating your kids. Have conversations with them. So the culture shifted. And here's what the big thing that we talk about. Parenting norms are on a pendulum. We are constantly reacting to our parents' bad parenting. Okay. What we do in our own parenting across cultural norms anyway, is we take the parts of our parents' parenting that we like, and anything that we don't like, we move to the extreme opposite direction of. So for those second half of baby boomers, for the flower children's perspective, their parents were very distant from them. They were very cold and unconnected to them. And they didn't like that. They missed that. So what happens when they have children is they go in the extreme opposite direction. They're hyper-connected. They hyper-listen to their children. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So all of this is swinging in that 20-year pendulum over and over again. And then, of course, what happens for Gen Xers is we're all trained, no, you Ferberize your child. No child ever died from crying, right? Every 10 years, we shift parenting philosophy slightly. Like, for example, we're in a weird Pinterest philosophy at this point in time where parents are supposed to be all things to their children. And that'll swap when their children say, God, my parents were in my business 24/7. And when they have children, they'll be like, go have fun. Go play outside.
So, right? So I love the way you describe on how the millennial generation and Gen Zers really have come to be the way they are. But, and obviously for all intents and purposes, I don't necessarily blame them. Although I don't know if you can blame anybody, really. But I don't want to blame anybody because then I'm going to get yelled at.
There's not anyone to blame. It just is.
Yeah. But now that they've gotten, so these young adults are coming into the workforce, you know, they've not been conditioned well.
They've not been taught to play the game. That's maybe the better way to say it.
Good point. So now what do we tell them? Like how do they navigate not knowing that their mindset is hurting them? How do you convince these kids who that's all they know that, you know, you can't be a director in 2 years?
Right.
You know, you'll walk out of college and run a company. Well, you could if it was a startup.
If it was yours.
If it was yours.
You have right. some sort of great groundswell of money.
Right.
Absolutely good.
But what do you tell them? Because, I mean, it's not their fault that they
it's were not their fault.
Maybe guided improperly.
Well, and that's one of the things that I tell millennials all the time. And just when I talk to companies as a whole, you won't find a single millennial ever who asked for a participation trophy. They don't want those. It's their hippie parents that decided that was a good idea, right? So the issue is that they've not been taught to play a game, that the rules are totally separate from the game that they from the life that they have lived. So what we have to teach them is what part of the game is worth continuing and what part of the game is not worth continuing. So let's use the example of hierarchy. Like you were talking about the idea of they immediately feel like they should move up into the group. So hierarchy comes from a very military mindset. Okay. In the military, you move up by not dying. That sounds horrible, but it's 100% true. So of course you can be the leader. If you go into a battle and you don't die, of course you should be leading other people. So we take this mindset and we drop it on top of the American workforce. And we say, the longer you've been in a place, you should be the leader. Well, that's not true. It's not your leadership ability is in no way connected to how long you are willing to stay in one company or how long you are willing to, you know, not change jobs. That doesn't have any connection to leadership ability.
Or really also essentially your ability to lead in general, because
yeah,
just because you have years of experience doesn't mean you're a good leader.
Means nothing. And every single one of us that is on your call or listening to your podcast right now has had at least one boss who was an idiot that you looked at and you thought, how in the heck did you get in charge of me? Right?
Uh-huh.
Everybody's had one of those. And so that's a part that we look at of the game. And we say that part of the game is stupid. I agree with you, young person. That should be booted, right? Now, here's the thing, though. There are certain things you can only learn over time. That's where the gaining of wisdom comes in. You can only learn how to better interact with a ornery client by dealing with lots of ornery clients, right? So it's more of the lesson that needs to be taught. The leadership styles that need to be taught. It's not linked to longevity. It's linked to the lessons, the ability, right? So there are some parts of the game like hierarchy or clothing choices or pretending to look busy even though you're not busy that need to go. They need to go. They're stupid, right? And that's the thing. There are those parts. But then there are other parts of the game like learning how to resolve conflict, learning how to be an effective listener, learning how to be a good leader, learning how to make sure that you get in good with the secretary of this person so that you can form a better relationship with that person. That needs to be continued, right? So this is the big thing is we like to pretend like we're not even playing a game, Michael, much less teach the rules to anybody else. But here's what we have to understand. Gen Xers and boomers and traditionalists, we all learned those rules either from our parents or from the school. We had things like FBLA. We had parenting classes. We had, you know, business typing. We had all of these classes that were built into our curriculum that were life skills, right? And we took all of that away from millennials. We took it all away. It became all about theory and growing, and that's it. And being able to repeat things. So when we take a lot of the teaching of gameplay out, now the pressure falls to the parents to be the ones who are teaching the game. Well, the parents are tired. I don't want to teach the game. And they're dealing with the game where the game is stupid. This is a big problem that we have. We have to decide how much of the game do we even want to continue And then we have to teach those soft skills to those young people so that they can be successful at the game.
Now you have these millennials or Gen Zers going into a market where there are no jobs, especially those that are graduating that have really no experience. Their mindset's not going to change. Their mindset is that they're ready to conquer the world.
Yeah, their mindset is that I'm a shiny diamond and that you should be happy to have me.
Right. But we all know that's not really true. I mean, yeah. Right now. What would you tell them? I mean, what do you tell somebody who just spent 4 years and who has $50,000-$60,000 going to school, getting a degree, to come into a situation where there are no jobs?
One of the big things that I would tell them is while they are applying, do everything they can to be growing themselves as a person. Mm-hmm. The companies that I work with, and I work with a lot of companies at this point, they are much more interested in hiring people who are teachable and people who are tolerable. Right? Mm-hmm. If you are a likable person and you learn easy, I'm much more interested in hiring you at this point in time. Mm-hmm. So learning, really being intentional about growing your soft skills, your communication skills, is going to long-term give you an advantage. That'd be the first thing, is while you're waiting for a job, make sure you're growing yourself as a person. The second thing that I would say here is, I don't know where your expectations have come from, but you need to lower them. There are certain things that we need to learn as people, and you don't necessarily learn those. The best example I'll give you is I went to California, and I was going from LA into the desert, and I didn't want to sit in horrible traffic. It was going to take too long. I didn't want to do it. And so I looked on MapQuest, and I saw this route. It looked like it was going to knock a whole hour off of my drive, Michael, and that just looked amazing. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go do that. Now, what I didn't know at the time, because I'd never been to California, was that I was about to go over Angel Crest Parkway, which is one of the highest drives in the country.
I am very familiar.
It is terrifying. Uh-huh. And so what happened was my lack of knowledge got me in a position to where, yes, I was moving faster, but I was in no way equipped to handle what I was dealing with, okay? Sometimes sitting your butt and going slower in traffic is better than white-knuckling it on Angel Crest Parkway. So it's okay sometimes to go a little bit slower and learn the lessons and not be in a position of sink or swim or drown or die, driving off a cliff just because you're moving faster. So whatever your expectations are of how this was supposed to go, realize that it's not, life isn't like that. It's constantly twists and turns and pivot points, and everything gives you another opportunity to learn. Be okay with learning at the pace that your life moves at. Wanting to come in hot and heavy and get the big kid job, I'm sorry, that's a sitcom. And that doesn't exist, right? I'm right. Sorry that we lied to you.
What I've been telling these guys, you know, as they're coming to me asking me for advice, is that the job that you take today may not be your dream job, and it may not be the job 100%. That you keep, you know, in the long term. But it's you're using your time wisely.
Yes.
You know, sitting around waiting for things, you know, for the sky to stop falling is not going to get you back to work.
I completely agree. And I would tell my students when I was a professor at UAH, I would say, if there is a company that you really, really want to work for, go to those people and say, I will empty the trash cans. Whatever I can do to be around you, I will do. I just want to pick up little tidbits that I've got. I will work. And that's what companies are wanting. This idea of, well, I'm going to hold out until I get a senior management position. Dude, you just can't. Waiting for it to all magically come together is a fallacy. It's just not true. Sometimes you need to build a building block. There's things that you need to learn at job one so that you can be better at job two, so that you can be better at job three. And none of those are necessarily even in a management position. Be okay with the flow that your life is moving towards, but sitting there and waiting for the dream job does not get you any closer long-term to your life goals.
Right. Absolutely. let's look at the flip side. You know, we talked a little bit about the millennials, the inexperience coming into this workforce with expectations. Obviously, you know, times are rough, times have changed. But now you also have this reverse influx of generation or baby boomers that are either not retiring or coming back into the workforce, as this happened back in 2008. Now, if you look at back in 2008, the general consensus was is that they struggled to get back to work. A lot of them could say that it's because that they were old. Others could say that they just weren't experienced in the new generation of how things are done, you know, the technology right. and things like that. Now, I've seen in the last year or two a change. The change that I've seen is that companies like older folks now versus younger folks because they're willing to work. They aren't afraid to put a 60, 70 hour work week in. They're not afraid to get the job done. Whereas, as we know, going back to it, that the Generation Zers and the millennials of this time, you know, they generally like to clock in at 8 o'clock and leave at 5, and they generally want things handed to them. The good news is that the baby boomers have seen more and more acceptance because of the fact that they want people that want to actually do work and actually, you know, do a job. But my question to you is now that we're going into the situation again, how do baby boomers then position themselves? Because one of the things that we all know, just like last time, is there's going to be a lot of high-level guys, but not a lot of high-level positions. It's going to be a lot of downstream grunt work, you know, I guess you could call it. It's going to be a lot of, you know, the worker jobs versus the, you know, sitting up in a fancy desk jobs. Now, mind you, I don't think that any baby boomer can be categorized as somebody that likes to sit around in a fancy desk. But what do you think their challenge is going to be? And what do you think that their mindset should be coming into this crazy time of craziness, really?
Well, I think this is another opportunity where we have to go backwards in order to understand now. In order to understand the baby boomers, you have to understand two fundamental things. The first thing is that the older baby boomers were raised by people who were children during the Great Depression. And so what happens is they look at their child and they say, the most important thing on the planet for you to have is a job. Okay. So boomers were trained that having a job was vital. You don't have to be happy. You don't have to be fulfilled. You must have a job. Okay. That's the first level. The second level of this is that baby boomers outnumbered their parents 3 to 1. Okay. There were tons of them. They knew there were extremely high levels of competition.
Do you know why? Do you know why baby boomers were out so big?
Yeah, because all their dads got off the boats from World War II, kissed mommies, and made triple the amount of babies.
Right.
Right. So they make a whole lot of babies. Now you've got triple the amount of competition, right, for jobs. And this idea that having a job is the most important thing in the whole entire world. So this is part of why boomers won't retire. It's not because they don't want to do it. It's because their job and their identity are intrinsically linked to one another. Okay. Mm. So here's what you got to understand. Like you were talking about the idea of them not leaving, not retiring right now. Boomers were told by their traditionalist parents at any point in time, the other shoe could drop. Right. That remember, their traditionalist parents are the ones who were like washing their aluminum foil and keeping, you know, the old bolts from things, because at any point in time it could get bad. So they've always had this sort of one foot in the, well, as long as I keep working, then no matter how bad things get, I'll be all right. So this is part of why they're not leaving right now, is because it's like, yes, I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm over it. I'd like to spend time having actual retirement, but I don't know how bad it's about to get. So I'm going to keep my foot in, right, so that I don't lose it. So this job and identity connection, right, is extremely important. Example, when you meet anybody over, I'd say, 56 years of age, when you meet them for the first time, you're going to go through a weird ritual of shaking hands. As a part of that, you are going to say the same sentence. They're going to say the same sentence, which is, what do you do for a living? Okay, so here's what's interesting. What you have done is you have trained an entire generation of people to be able, that they believe in, that every time they meet a stranger, Michael, they should be able to verbally affirm their worth and contribution to American society. Every time. Mm-hmm. So those people are never going to be like, oh, I used to be something and now I'm not. You with me on this?
Yep.
You have to get down to the root of their mindset before you can get into why they're not leaving and how it's going to be a struggle for them at this point in time. Mm-hmm. So why they are willing to do anything, work 60-hour weeks, all that, comes down to the childhood plant of their parents saying, you must have a job, and look at all these other people that want that same job. So you do whatever it takes, son or daughter, to make sure that you have a job. That explains why they're not going to walk out, and why other companies now want them to stay in, because they will do whatever it takes to keep that job because of the mindset that came out of childhood.
Kristen, you're amazing. your personality is so magnetic.
What do you offer? What is your...
Okay, so the company's name is Gen Y, G-E-N-W-H-Y, like why are all the generations messed up? Gen Y Communications, and you can go to www.genY.com and check us out. So main things that we do, the first thing that we do is we do live presentations. My partner, Philip, and I both speak on generational diversity. We also talk about nonverbal communication, conflict resolution, listening, you know, motivating, all of that kind of good, soft, skilly kind of training. So we do a lot of that. That's probably our first level. The second thing is we work with a lot of conventions. So if you are needing a keynote speaker that is both fun and funny and still gives you something actually skill-based by the time you walk out, the good thing about generational diversity is that every single company in every single industry is dealing with generational diversity issues, and that won't be going away anytime in the future. So conventions is another big thing. So that's our live portion. Second portion that we've got is we do monthly webinars where you can join as a member and get those monthly webinars. The first quarter was all about improving your public speaking. Second quarter is more about the generational stuff. Third stuff is about how to do better meetings, all of that kind of good stuff. And then the last section is all about nonverbals. So,
just so people know, I'm going to put a bunch of information, her contact, her website, her...
Great. But hey, we'll do a special discount code too for your folks too.
So okay. Sure. Well, yeah, we'll put that in there. And so, because I definitely think, Kristen, you bring awesome energy, which I think is, you know, you and I both know in the world of keeping people's attention, energy and personality is 1,000% what it takes. So
100%.
I go back and look at my podcast to see which ones did well and which ones didn't go well. And it's all about the personality. I can tell you. I see the people I interviewed and I'm thinking, oh, that's why that one did well. If you love Kristen's personality, I can't speak for her partner, but I know Kristen's amazing. If you want to engage with her, I'll put all her information in the podcast notes. Please reach out to her. Feel free to ask her any questions. Go to her website, learn about her company, and who knows, maybe she'll be on the show again sometime in the future if she still likes me.
Would love that.
And you'll remember to practice your social distancing right now. So, Kristen, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on tonight.
I've enjoyed it. I look forward to you coming and hanging out in Alabama, Michael.
All right. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. Have a great one.
You too. Bye-bye. Please remember to subscribe to my podcast. Also, please feel free to share, like, send, tag your friends. Let them have the opportunity to listen and understand and get a better viewpoint from the people that we talk to. Also, please don't forget, if you have any questions, you can email me at any time. And I hope you guys had a great day. Please remember to subscribe to my podcast. Also, please feel free to share, like, send, tag your friends. Let them have the opportunity to listen and understand and get a better viewpoint from the people that we talk to. Also, please don't forget, if you have any questions, you can email me at any time. And I hope you guys had a great day.